Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name. Your name.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life with your host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our guest tonight is Dr. Carlos Alvarado, and we will be talking about Charles Roche, a Nobel Prize-winning scientist's exploration of psychic phenomena. If you have a question or comment for our guest tonight, the number here is 888-627-6008. Tonight's show is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they could be found on the web at starseedgems.com. So, Bob, I know you want to get right into the interview, so let's get going.
Okay, and it's our pleasure to have Carlos Alvarado back on. Of course, Carlos is a member of the Foundation's Scientific Advisory Board, and he has a PhD in psychology from the University of Edinburgh. He's an associate editor of the Journal of Scientific Exploration, a member of the editorial board of the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research, and a past president of the Parapsychological Association. His work has centered on survey research on out-of-body experiences and other psychic experiences, and studies about the history of psychical research. He is currently a research fellow and staff at the Parapsychology Foundation, and he's one of the editors of the Research in Parapsychology and has published over 300 papers in history, psychology, psychiatry, and parapsychology journals. He posts a regular blog called Parapsychology, News, History, and Research. You can find that on carlosalvarado.wordpress.com. And his new book, which we're going to be talking about tonight, as Fran mentioned, is Charles Roche, a Nobel Prize-winning scientist's exploration of psychic phenomena. And I'll add that the website for Carlos and Dr. Zingroni is the Azire, AZIRE.org. Welcome to the show, Carlos.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Pleasure to have you again. So, you know, I read the book, and Charles Roche is a name that comes up a lot. I didn't really know much about him. I just know every time I read about the history of parapsychology, Roche always comes up because people always mention that he was a Nobel Prize winner, and that carries a lot of weight. So tell us a little bit about some of Roche's other credentials.
Well, he was a professor of medicine and physiology at the University of Paris, which was, at the time, it was, you know, the most prestigious institution of higher learning in France and in many parts of Europe. He was extremely well known and respected, not only for his position as a physiologist, but also because he wrote on a variety of topics and established himself early on as an intellectual covering topics such as psychology, literature, history. He was, as some people put it at the time and more recently, he was a Renaissance man. You know, he really was open to knowledge in general, and psychical research was one of his main interests.
Yeah, and he coined the term metapsychics, you know, to designate the science of the occult. But is that the same thing? Did that morph into what's referred today as metaphysics?
No, not really. He used the term metaphysics as kind of as an inspiration, but that term metapsychics means basically psychical research. And because what he's including there is all the topics of psychical research, you know, telepathy, clairvoyance, mediumship, healing, dowsing, all kinds of different psychic phenomena. I guess he wanted to have a different term to designate the discipline he was studying. And very early on, it was around 1905 that he proposed that term that has never been really big in English language, but that's the way that parapsychology even today is known in France. Over there, the term caught very early on, especially after 1922 when he published a textbook on the subject and became really influential.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, he was a very learned academic in addition to being a physician. But how did he become interested in psychic phenomena? What was the catalyst
for him to become interested? Well, he always, from his youth, and I discussed that in the book, he was very open to new phenomena and new ways of thinking. And from very early on, as he was in his residence as a physician, as a very young man, he started being interested in hypnosis. And he conducted his own experiments, hypnotizing some patients, and started publishing. In 1875, he published a paper about hypnosis that is considered to have affected significantly in France the scientific study of hypnosis. And as he was doing that, he knew that what he was doing was kind of controversial, because hypnosis was not widely accepted, and a lot of people consider it to be the realm of charlatans, of things that really were not true, that didn't have any good scientific method. But nonetheless, he disagreed, and he wanted to contribute to the study of that area. In doing his own studies, he encountered slowly examples of what today perhaps we will call telepathy. At the time where he was writing, and particularly in France, they will talk about mental suggestion, the possibility of suggesting a mind at a distance with an idea, sending an image, sending a command, you know, asking someone to do something. He started finding those phenomena in his own hypnotic practice, and he, of course, was familiar with the previous mesmeric literature. The idea, also very popular in France, of mesmerism, that accepted the induction of trance via the vehicle of animal magnetism. You know, they believed that people could channel an energy they call animal magnetism and induce trance. But in the process of doing that, they could also induce telepathy, especially healings. It was a big movement with all healing of all kinds of conditions, psychologically, but physical conditions and the like. And Richer was very familiar with that tradition, which had started in France and in Europe in general from the 18th century. So,
I was surprised to learn from reading the book that he did extensive research with card guessing tests and using objects and photos as targets, and he actually incorporated the use of statistics in the studies. So, I mean, was he the inspiration for the later work of people like J.B. Ryan?
Yeah, perhaps not a direct inspiration, but certainly he started the chain of influences that got to J.B. Ryan. In 1884, he published a paper in a journal in France that was basically a report of all kinds of guessing studies, you know, guessing cards, guessing images, and basically it was a telepathy study. And he was he thought the phenomena was real and that it could be studied experimentally. And he used probability theory, you know, he was trying to calculate the odds to say that, well, was that a chance occurrence, that thing that the person guessed and it was right or not? And in the paper is full of some formulas and a lot of very kind of complicated discussions of the mathematics of probability. And that's a very, really important pioneering paper, because it's the first time that someone published experimental work using stats. As years went by, other people in England, in the Society for Psychical Research, knew of his work, and they slowly started developing the use of stats. But stats took a long time to come in. It was basically in the 1920s that it started. And, of course, the work of J.B. Rhine here in the United States, where he reported it in 1934, his first results. And in his literature review, he, of course, acknowledged Charles Richer's contribution. And it stands as a very important contribution to psychical research. But also some historians, particularly in recent years, have argued that Richer also contributed to psychology and the behavioral sciences in general, because that was a time where very few people will try to use probability theory to study any type of phenomena. So it is considered that his contribution transcends psychical research, that it affected psychology as well.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Carlos Alvarado. The book is about Charles Richer, the Nobel Prize-winning scientist's exploration of psychic phenomena. The book just came out within the last week or two. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, I'd like to get into some of Richer's experiences working with the mediums of the day and physical mediumship. So we'll go to a quick break. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing. and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Carlos Alvarado. If you have a question or comment for our guest, the number here is 888-627-6008. This show is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Carlos Alvarado. It's always a pleasure to have him because he's a recognized authority on you know, the history and of parapsychology. So listen up and you'll be able to learn a lot. The book is Charles Richer, a Nobel Prize winning scientist, Exploration of Psychic Phenomena. So Richer, which you wouldn't think of, but you outlined it in the book, that he also had some personal experiences, you know, involving, you know, him and his family. I mean, do you recall one that you could tell us?
Yes, he had several experiences. Let's see, one of them was a dream that his wife had about the death of his maternal grandfather. That, you know, the wife just came out of sleep and reported the dream, and they have recently seen the grandfather, and he didn't seem to be in bad shape, and he had just died suddenly. That's one of the things. And he accepted it as real. And he had several other things of that sort that at the time, I think, were very important for him because, you know, it was personal experience. But he also had, you know, a lot of experiences with psychics that he tested. He conducted many experiments from the 1880s. He was publishing experiments on what he called lucidity. We will call that today just clairvoyance or sometimes just general ESP. And he found a lot of very neat examples of apparent telepathic transmission with different persons that he tested. Some of them was just drawings, you know, the shapes of drawings and drawings of a house, of all kinds of things. And those things slowly, you know, kind of accumulated in his mind and convinced him. You can see when he first starts writing, you know, he's very careful. And like, he was careful all through his life. But as he kept publishing more and more, he was more sure of his results and of the reality of this phenomenon. And it was not only ESP. He also started having early on, at least from the 1890s, experiences with physical phenomena. You know, he will go to see physical mediums in whose presence, you know, they reported table levitations or materializations of body parts or of whole figures that will appear in the seance room. And at first, you know, he was very kind of skeptical and very careful. But it's very interesting when you see, especially his initial publications on the subject, he was trying not to deny not to do what a lot of his colleagues in science in general were doing around him. He was trying to give an opportunity to the phenomena to manifest. He was trying to be respectful, but at the same time, he discussed the doubts that he had. But it's interesting because with all the doubts, when he's writing about them, he also puts great descriptions of things that he saw, such as in the case of Eusapia Palladino, the famous Italian physical medium. He describes how he saw hands moving around and kind of touching him in a room that was kind of somewhat dark, and that impressed him greatly, but he was not completely convinced. It was only a few years later, as he had more seances with the medium, that he came forth and he said, "This is real. You know, there is no question about it. He has seen it happen so often that he had to accept it, and he saw it under his own conditions." So that's very interesting when you see the development of, you know, his belief in psychic phenomena. And as years went by, you know, he became a very strong defender of the reality of psychic phenomena while maintaining a critical mind. I mean, that doesn't mean that he accepted or endorsed every single psychic or every medium. He criticized some mediums as not being good enough or not performing in good conditions of control. But when he was convinced that the control was good, and particularly in those cases where he himself was supervising the seance, if he believed the things were real, he went ahead and he said so and defended the phenomena strongly. And that was very important for the development of psychical research, especially in France, because at the time he was really the most famous scientist that got involved in France with psychic phenomena. That's why he was always approached by journalists and interviewing him, or every time he published something or said something, if you go through the newspapers of the period, you can find a lot of journalists paying attention to what he was saying. So he really brought a lot of respectability to the area.
Yeah, and there's a great quote that you wrote about in the book from Richet. He said, it's a simple task to dismiss extraordinary facts, but it was not the role of science to do so. You know, what is extraordinary today will be part of tomorrow's common science. He apparently recognized early on that there was a bias, a strong bias among his colleagues. Yes. So as you mentioned, I think we owe a lot of gratitude for his fortitude and being brave in defending the reality of this non-physical phenomena. I mean, when he sat with the mediums of the day, it seems like he was somewhat conflicted. I mean, you mentioned, the manifestations, the materializations. Did he coin the term ectoplasm?
Well, I have never been convinced of that. Certainly, everyone says that, but I have never found very clear evidence to support that. Certainly, he was among one of the first that used it. But I have never found a publication around. A lot of people say that it's around 1894 that he did that. I have not found anything published of him using the term during the 19th century.
Yeah.
So I have really my doubts. But he certainly did much to popularize the terms. He basically adopted that term from biology. It was not a term that was completely original. The original part was the use of it in terms of seances and related to materialization phenomena. But he certainly wrote a lot about it, especially from the 1920s on.
And I had a smile when he described the materializations that he witnessed. He called it both absurd and a scientific fact at the same time. So he was somewhat conflicted, he seems to have been somewhat conflicted by his materialistic education, even though he would say that he was bowled over by the evidence, you know, and not still fully not committing to believing in survival. So as you mentioned, I think he sort of changed his views a bit towards the latter part of his career, right?
I think he started to change his view. The evidence that I have found in his publications, including several that have never been translated into English, is that he was thinking much closer to spiritualistic concepts, but he never came through saying so. That's the difficult part with him. You know, you find evidence, you know, that he writes to people like Oliver Lodge, famous physicist and psychical researcher from England, and Lodge defended spirit survival of death. And he believed in mediumship and many other phenomena. He had debates. They have published debates with Richet about the possibility of survival. And in print, that was in the 1920s, they cannot debate it, and Richet came as being still skeptical. He admitted that there was real phenomena there, that mediums were saying things that were true, but he thought that, well, it still could be telepathy, it still could be something else. Later on, he communicates to Lodge and to some other people, and he basically confesses to them, no, I'm approaching now your view. And I think there is more to it than I have recognized before. So that's the closest I think that he came to accepting survival. He in some of his writings, even in the 1920s, and he died in 1935, he was saying that there were some particular phenomena that he found very difficult to explain except accepting spirit intervention, and some of them were deathbed visions, you know, visions that people have as they are dying, and sometimes there are children that are dying and they have all these visions. He found some of those cases very impressive, and he confessed so in writing, but then he always came back and said, but I'm not completely convinced. And as you said, he always had a conflict within him. And I think it comes from that early training that he had in medicine and physiology. I mean, here was a man that was used to very exact physiological experimentation, you know, using animals, using all kinds of other procedures to see how the human body works. He studied things like digestion. And he was used to manipulate the conditions of stomach acid and other physiological phenomena and measure all those things really carefully. And then all of a sudden, he finds all of these phenomena, and he has to recognize that there is more to life than what he learned at school, in medical school. But at the same time, it's very hard for him to accept that there is more than just the material world. So that conflict is there with him all the time. And that makes him, I think, a fascinating figure. I will not be surprised if he really, at the end of his life, was completely convinced, as some people claim. I think there is certainly evidence that he was on his way. But I think that he died before he make a particular statement, you know, unless there is evidence of that in private letters or something. I have not been able to find that, and I have been in contact with people in France, you know, that have access to that material, and they don't know of anything like that.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I'm happy you wrote the book is I jotted down a wealth of wonderful quotes from him. You know, that, you know, for instance, he said, "Everything of which we are ignorant appears improbable, but the improbabilities of today are the elementary truths of tomorrow." Yes. That's great. Yeah. You know, so he really had a lot.
Yeah, he had a lot of faith about future science, the future development of humankind, that the things that you know are not understood today, that could change in the future. And he was hoping that metapsychics or psychical research would really become much more mainstream in the future. He didn't say exactly when, but I think he hoped that it will be fairly soon, you know, that it will not be like the reality that we have seen, that is still rejected by science and that there is still, you know, a lot of opposition. But he certainly was aware of the issues and he experienced, you know, all that internally, emotionally. And I think that's what makes him such a fascinating figure.
Yeah. And it's always interesting to when you go, we go back in history, you know, it makes you think. You go back in the history of mediumship and psychic phenomena, you know, it seems that the scientists of the day who actually conducted the research and sat with the mediums and became familiar with the literature came to the belief that these things were true, that they were real, as opposed to the others who simply dismissed it. So it makes you think, have things changed that much today as we fast forward? I think we have the same issue.
Yes, I think we have the same issue. You know, I think most people that are incredulous about ESP, or about mediumship, or survival of death, I think many of them have never studied the phenomena as they should have, as they have studied things in their own discipline. You know, they have never really paid attention to the evidence very carefully. And certainly a lot of the criticism that we still get today is kind of beliefs that certain scientists have about what is possible and what is not. But it's not much more than that. And that is one of the things that Richer was always fighting against. You know, like he admitted from experience that he had his own beliefs and training, but he said the facts are the ones that have to decide the issue. As absurd as some phenomena can be or difficult to understand, like the phenomena of premonitions, which he wrote a whole book about that. The fact is that these things are reported. He himself has seen evidence, and he had many colleagues in psychical research that had presented evidence. So he had admitted, you know, I cannot explain these things, and he never gave clear explanations. You know, what he suggested was always tentative and all that, but at least he accepted that the phenomena were real and that it involved more than the usual explanations that scientists were offering. And I think, in a way, that's really his greatest contribution in giving a push and giving respectability to psychical research, particularly in France. Because outside of France, people know him and they know his work, but you really have to get into the context of the French spiritism and psychical research to understand how big a figure Richer was, you know, how prestigious, and there were people that almost venerated him, that talked with him in great respect. Even the spiritists that found him too skeptical were highly appreciative of his efforts. So, you know, his influence was tremendous and was all around in the popular press and all. So in that way, he contributed greatly. And I think he opened the door for a lot of other people to do their work. And a lot of those other people were more open to survival of death and many other interpretations. So he also contributed indirectly, I think, to those developments.
Yeah. And sometimes he just used common sense, as you point out. I mean, he had great respect for the other researchers of the time. And he used them as an example, showing how unlikely it would be, or even impossible, for such scholars to all be duped, you know. So sometimes he looks at a thing with a practical eye, and you have to respect that. We are talking with Dr. Carlos Alvarado, who wrote this extraordinary book on Charles Richer, a Nobel Prize-winning scientist, exploration of psychic phenomena. We are going to go to another break, and we have a lot more to talk about with Carlos, so stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love knows no death. A groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
For those who are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Carlos Alvarado. This show is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. As always, we want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings, especially this time of year when we are busy populating the calendar. So it could change literally almost every day. So just to remind you, coming up free this coming February, on February 2nd at 1 p.m. Central Time, our Afterlife Discussion Group will meet in La Porte, Texas. On February 8th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern or 11 to noon Pacific and anything in between and on either side of that, the Visionary Explorers Group meets online. And on February 11th at 6:45 p.m., the Afterlife Discussion Group meets in Cold Spring Harbor, New York. Our Holiday of the Earth Raffle 2020 is up and running on our website. One chance is only $5, and you could be one of five winners of medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Tracy Lee Nash, Neil Zapowski, Renee Buck, Catherine Nadal, and Eliza Ray. Our 2020 webinar schedule begins on Sunday, February 23rd, with Dr. Stafford Betty presenting When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying? Several of our webinars this year will be at various times and on alternate days of the week to accommodate other time zones. So please check the website for registration information, and please, please pay attention to the dates and times. And also mark your calendar for our Summer Grief Retreat, July 10th through 12th in Chester, Connecticut. That information will be up on the website in a few days. And please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits, always naming Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice, and follow us on YouTube for great stories and videos. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Carlos Alvarado. We're talking about his new book on Charles Richer, a Nobel Prize-winning scientist exploration of psychic phenomena. Carlos's website is theazire, azire.org, and he also has a blog that he writes on a regular basis, carlosalvarado.wordpress.com. You know, Carlos, before we go back to Richer, there's a question I always wanted to ask you, and you're the one I have to ask. So who do you think, out of all the research after mediumship and all these years, who's the greatest medium of all time?
That's a difficult question. Because there's so many good ones, you know.
Yeah.
A personal favorite of mine was the Italian Eusapia Palladino. She was mainly a physical medium. I think she produced a lot of phenomena that certainly cannot be explained by Freud or any other normal way. But she's a very difficult person to study because she made investigations hard, you know, the way that she behaved, and on occasion she was caught cheating, and it's sometimes difficult to make your mind, but there are so many reports with her, not only people like Richer, but people like Oliver Lodge, people like the Italian Cesare Lombroso, Italian psychiatrist and criminologist. When you read the reports, you know, some of the things are so clear that, at least for me, you know, I cannot believe that everything can be explained away. So I think she's one of my favorites. Certainly Leonora Piper is another big one, in mental medium producing mainly communications, either verbally or in writing. She was studied by a lot of different people, first by William James, and then by people like Frederick Myers, Richard Hodgson, and several others. And I think a lot of the conditions are also fairly good. And with her, you know, she allowed herself to be investigated. And the reports that we have now are very long and sometimes very detailed. And that's good and it's bad. You know, it's bad because a lot of people don't want to go through so many pages of information. But at the same time, there is a lot of information about the process of communication, for example, that you also see in the case of mediums like Gladys Osborne Leonard, that you see how images will come to the mind of some of these mediums, how some of the messages from people that were deceased will manifest in different ways, sometimes with symbols and the like. I think those two mediums, Leonard and Piper, are very, very important for the development of belief in survival and also psychical investigations in general. Yeah. So I find it really hard, you know, to select
one of them. I sorry to put you on the spot with that. You know, Richer was always offering, it seems, you know, possible explanations for psychic phenomena. And I know you mentioned that he seemed to center around vibrations, you know, that our unconscious mind produced vibrations that are picked up by another. That doesn't sound that far off from the theories that still persist, vibrations that can't be perceived with the known senses. Is that something that, did he reach any conclusions, about how these things happen? Or obviously he wasn't talking about quantum entanglement, but...
Yeah, no, he never developed it beyond that. He presented those things in the late 1920s, and he talked about vibrations, but never in very specific ways. You know, he never discussed the physiological aspects or even the physical characteristics of those vibrations. Certainly, that concept of vibrations, you know, is really very old. It actually goes back to antiquity. But there are many in the 19th century and 1920s, around the time that Richet was writing, that had a lot of similar ideas. There, a lot of people talk about nerve forces and all kinds of physical mechanisms that were not accepted by science, certainly not by physics. And this idea of vibrations sounded consistent in a way with the science of the times, you know, in the 1920s. Consistent with ideas about electromagnetism and a few other physical processes, but he never really specified in great detail what were the nature of those vibrations. Because a lot of people today in parapsychology are very skeptical of this type of vibrations, if they are purely physical or if they're purely electromagnetic, because a lot of the effects that we get with ESP research in the lab doesn't seem to be affected by distance. You have phenomena such as precognition, you know, a time displacement. And if it's just a simple radio model of something coming out from one brain to another, that doesn't seem to explain a lot of the evidence, you know, that we have. So those models kind of started to... Even though they're still believed today, and you find them a lot today in New Age, in spiritualistic writings, and in just in common sense discussions, parapsychologists are very skeptical today of those things, and basically because no one has been able to measure these things or determine specifically what particular waves we're talking about. Very different from the development of, say, radio. Those types of communications, you know, where at first they were ambiguous, but as years went by, it was possible, you know, to quantify the process. It was possible to know the limits, the problems with distortions and the like, the measurement of the physical signal. None of that has been possible with ESP. So that was one of the problems, you know, that I think Richet had. And he never developed it much more than saying that there were vibrations. And of course, a lot of his colleagues criticized him, even people in psychical research, that they thought that it was just a little too ambiguous and not specific enough.
Yeah. And you mentioned Eusebio Palladino and Richet, you know, witnessed her, I think, in many occasions, and he saw some remarkable levitations. So, you know, I wonder, when he saw those levitations, evidently he was convinced that no fraud was taking place, but I was wondering how he explained it. You know, do you think that he thought it was some sort of psychokinesis, you know, of mind affecting matter, or did he just dismiss the spirit involvement, even though many others... Yeah. In the day, you know, thought that was what was going on.
Yeah, he did. He never really used the spirit explanation, you know, that there were spirits moving the table or behind the phenomena of the table. What he speculated on was a popular idea at the time, in the beginning of the 20th century, when he was writing about these things, were the idea of psychic forces. You know, that we have had this coming from the mesmeric movement, that the human being can generate these semi-physical forces that go out of the body and can do all kinds of physical things. They can move objects. If they get together and condense, so to speak, of they form materializations. They can affect photographic plates. They can do all kinds of physical phenomena. That was a general model that existed, particularly in Europe. And Richer knew about it, and he wrote about it. He was not so positive about it, but he speculated around that. And he even cited, writing at a time where Einstein started being known in physics, that maybe some of the ideas of Einstein and the few things that we have learned about the new radiations, and those were the times where X-rays were still new and not that well understood, and even radio waves and things like that. All of this physical process inform speculation on new unknown forces. And he seemed to believe that there could be something to that, but he never pushed it too much. The only thing he stayed clear with was his spirit explanation, but he didn't push too much the idea of a physical force. Many others around him talk very specifically about forces. And again, there it's complicated because he said a lot of people talk about just simple forces that came out of the body of the medium, but some of them, like you find in the spiritist literature, believe that those forces were manipulated by discarnate spirits. So just the fact that you postulate that it's a force on the medium that doesn't take the spirits away. Many of these theories believe that the spirits basically will use the force in the body of the medium and in the body of the sitters, all the people that were surrounding the medium in the seance room. That was one model. And then there were other people that said, no, it's a force, a biological force that no one really understood. And it comes and it's the subconscious mind of the medium and the desires of people in the circle that manipulate that force, and it can do all kinds of intelligent things. And that, to this day, you know, it's like ideas of, is it survival, if it's ESP, it has been always in conflict, you know, and these are issues that have not been resolved. But Richer was working in that environment, and he was trying to be fair, but he never came completely for survival and seemed to accept some of the psychic force ideas, but also not completely. He kind of remained in the middle. So, you know, as a theorist, I'm afraid, I think as a theorist, Richer was not particularly effective. Or, you know, I think his genius was in discussing how science needed not to deny these things, that you need, if you were an honest scientist, you need to face these things and then try to learn as much as possible about them. But in terms of explanations, I don't think he made really, you know, any advances.
Yeah, I, as you, you know, point out, probably his biggest contribution is that, you know, he bravely promoted psychical research. He brought it out in the forefront. He didn't care what people particularly, you know, said about him. And he tried to open up minds. So he really was a pioneer, paved the way for a lot of the people that followed him. And that's, I guess, perhaps his greatest contribution, besides all the other endeavors that he was involved in. So we have been talking with Carlos Alvarado. The book is Charles Richer. You can find that in a link on
our radio page,
website. If you wish to purchase the book, Nobel Prize Winning Scientist's Exploration of Psychic Phenomena. Check out, I would encourage you to check out Carlos's regular blog, carlosalvarado.wordpress.com, and the organization that he and Dr. Zangroni run, the Azire .org, which is dedicated to educating the public about all of these different phenomena. So, Carlos, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Congratulations on the book, and we hope
thank you
again real soon.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Carlos. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.